Loud. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
It's Gary here in the kitchen cooking up the next series of Dishing It Out, which is coming to you very shortly in early July on Go Loud or wherever you get your podcast. To whet the appetite, we've cooked up some bite-sized portions of the pod, which you'll get every Tuesday and Thursday morning. A little taster of some of our favourite guests over the first four seasons. This week, it is the brilliant Aisling Moore of Goldie and Cork, the absolute queen of head-to-tail seafood cookery. Ed Chef joins us as well with some of your culinary conundrums. So here it is, dishing it out, bite-sized. Enjoy. Okay, today we are delighted, finally, in this season, to be joined by a chef, and one that Gareth and I hold in very, very high regard. Already in her young career, been named Chef of the Year. From Goldie in Cork, you're very welcome. Aisling, how are you?
I'm great, lads. How are you?
Fresh from the Big Grill Fest, I believe.
Very fresh.
You're looking very fresh.
Thank you.
Usually you'd bump into all these chefs after Taste of Dublin or something, and the Monday after, which is we record on a Monday. But yeah, you obviously behaved yourself to some extent last night, did you?
Had to. bed nice and early, like Cinderella. Yeah.
How did it go? I've never been to it, actually, Gareth. You were there this year too, were you?
I haven't been either.
Oh, have you not?
It wasn't on my radar at all, and then we were just talking. Kwanji sent me a few photographs, and I was like, oh, I need to go to that. But anyway, I was working the weekend; I couldn't get there. So
yeah,
it's really cool, and it just shows.
Have you been doing it for a few years?
3 years. The first year we did a stall, which was madness. Like when you're trying to run a restaurant and then set up a stall in a food festival, like that should just pick one thing.
You didn't make that mistake twice.
No, but I mean, I was very young and naive, and
yeah, and everybody makes that mistake. Like a lot of
yeah,
and look, I think in the early days of a restaurant too. Aisling, and you'll know this, like it's trial and error, like you know, 100%. You did it and you think yourself, right, well, I learned from that, I'm not doing that again. A lot of guys would have done that with Taste of Dublin, but as you say, especially when you're the owner or the head chef or the main chef, I mean, you've got people going to the Big Grill, want to see you there, then you've got your guests going to Goldie, they want to see you there. Like, and look,
how long have you had Goldie?
You can't do it all.
So it's going to be 5 in September.
Wow.
Which is crazy, I can't believe it. So we were 6 months before the pandemic.
Oh God!
How did that all come about? You're taking on a restaurant.
So I was working across the road in Elbow Lane, which was like a steakhouse, smokehouse, brewery, and I was the head chef there. Loved working there. Was allowed and afforded the opportunity to make all the mistakes, and you know, create menu dishes, menu items. Was learning loads. It was an open kitchen, which I loved, because you really get to see, you know, how much front of house offers to hospitality. Yeah, I think when we're closed in a kitchen sometimes, we really miss that link.
Yeah.
So love that.
And you get to really see people enjoying your food as well. Mm. Like there's definitely a closeness to it. Yeah.
I love it. So like I've been cooking in open kitchens now for 8 years, and yeah. I'd really struggle going back into a closed kitchen, you know.
And you're obviously, because I've tried 3 times go to Goldie, I've been doing the Today Show, but you're not open on a Monday and Tuesday, is
or
it?
Sunday, Monday.
Yeah. Right, you are.
Well, initially we had opened on Sundays and then it didn't really work. And then we were 5 days before the pandemic. And when we reopened after the pandemic, well, I mean, throughout it open, like everybody else, we went to 4. And we're still on 4 now. So we do like 5 prep shifts.
Yeah.
So we get like a deep clean and a prep shift in on a Tuesday, which is lovely.
So you just go in on a Tuesday?
Yeah. Get like kind of 2 big veg deliveries from local growers.
Right.
And we'll get like 100 kilo kind of delivery of fish, and we'll try build a menu then for the week from that.
Because you change the menu every week?
Every day. Yeah, and throughout service. So we'll take a variety of species, and then we'll do, let's say, 3 garnishes for 3 different species. And then as we sell out of each species, we're swapping in other ones. So.
And explain to the listener what you mean now. Me and Gary know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so let's say we could be starting with cod, move to ling, go to pollock, start the night with 22 portions of cod, go to 8 portions of ling, all in kind of priority of freshness. And like some of the fish we get in, we can't prep because it's too fresh.
Yeah.
So we'll be hanging it, we'll be drying it. Not to produce mad mushroom notes and all this kind of stuff. just to get that water out so we can get that crispy skin and, you know, cook it well. So yeah, we only use wild fish, and then we use like fire.
How much of a challenge is that?
It's really difficult.
That commitment.
I mean, it's really difficult. I think because my restaurant's a part of a group of restaurants, we have a bit of security. But like as a business plan, it is pretty crazy. You know, it can be really difficult. Like on Friday, like there was two storms last week, 2 days. So like 2 days.
No boats getting out. Yeah.
So like you're constantly checking weather apps. You're constantly trying to preempt what you're going to need. And luckily, our business is quite consistent.
Is there any meat on the menu, Ashley, or is it fully seafood?
We have free-range chicken.
Yeah.
For the partners who, there's always one who doesn't.
Yeah, because Ireland's a weird country for seafood eaters.
I think it's better.
Oh, it's definitely better, but to build a restaurant seafood alone is risky in a place that, for an island, would. Like our association with seafood, sure nobody knows better than you, Ashley, and it's bizarre.
So weird.
Yeah.
So we have vegetarian food as well. We'd have some of our guests would come in just to eat our veggie food, which we love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we'd sell 12 portions of chicken in a week.
Right.
Oh, really? Well, that's great.
It's not huge. But
so they are coming to you for the seafood only,
pretty much. I mean, there's always one. And when you have bigger groups as well, you know, it does allow families who really want to come in to be able to come in and have something. And it's free range chicken, which I'm delighted to be able to put on the menu and kind of have that conversation as well, because, you know, it has to be, we can't just be doing one really good thing with fish. We need to have it work throughout the business.
Yeah.
And not just about the food, but how you run the place, how you run the business, how your staff feel.
Are you from Cork? Is Cork home to you? Yeah. I always remember, and I only know this because it only recently came up. I don't know, I might have tagged you or sent it to you, but Katie, who had Fenn's Quay, obviously is a great, great friend of mine. And I always remember this night from, I think it's 8 or 9 years ago now, whenever it was. She did this mad number at nighttime anyways. But she was sending a nice message a couple of weeks ago to Aisling. But I remember her getting slammed this one night and saying, oh, it's just me and another girl in the kitchen. But I spoke to Katie that night, like, or that night or the next day. I was going, Jesus, Kate, like, you're going to kill yourself. You're putting yourself under so much pressure. But that young girl in the kitchen turned out to be her. It was mad, like, all the years later. And I goes, sure, of course, like, she's there and been in the thick of it for a long, long time.
We did that a lot of nights.
Yeah, I know, I know. And it's probably maybe a mistake she made or whatever, but sure, look, we all went through that, like, but it was just mad then, like, how I, after like a gap of 8 years, that I made this connection with you just being like the younger girl that was in the kitchen with her at the time. Was that your first job at Fenn's Quay?
First real job.
Yeah.
I did my work experience in Ballymaloe House when I was 16. My mom took a week off work and drove me up and down. And Mrs. Allen would have still been around at the time, so she was pottering around the kitchen, kind of having a look. So I was with JR in the kitchen for 3 days. JR is the first chef I ever worked with, which is like all downhill from me. He's just the sweetest,
he's a gentleman.
Nicest guy.
He's hilarious.
So I loved that. And then, I went to CIT, now MTU, and started with Kate. So I worked there for 2.5 years. And like, as you know, she was buying all the best Irish ingredients, you know. There was no expense spared on the ingredients. Yeah. So, you know, we were getting amazing feather blades from Owen O'Mahony's in the English market.
Yeah.
I tried every single Irish farmhouse cheese while I worked there.
Yeah.
And that was a great education.
Katie really loved her food. Like, she really was, brilliant. And she's just moved back, actually, to Ireland, I think.
Yeah, back in Cork.
Yeah. I don't know, is she cooking again yet or not? But she's back.
Yeah, she is. But it was a breakfast, lunch, dinner, brunch operation.
Yeah.
So, like, I realized pretty quickly I don't want to do.
She was killing herself.
I like dinner. You know, we don't do lunch in Goldie. One service a day. You know, I love that focus of being like, how many do we have on the books?
How many seats is in the restaurant?
36. So we do maybe between 70 and 80 covers a night.
And there's a lot of work in head to tail and seafood as well. Like, it's very, very, for anybody that's not familiar with it, I mean, depending on the species or the type of fish, it is A, for skilled hands, and B, to do it properly and to do it right. It's a skilled operation. If you give maybe listeners an idea, like, is it crab or like, what is the most labor intensive dish, maybe, that, because you probably go back to a couple of dishes, like, without maybe pinning it to one, but if it is it crab or is it sole? Is it something else? Like what do you see the boats landing? And you're like, shit.
Probably crab.
Yeah.
Probably is crab, but it, I mean, it is such a joy when you do have it and it's picked.
You reap what you sow, yeah.
Like it really is, but it's like, I remember there we got, was it like 10 kilos? Something mental anyway. One day we got it in and it was three of us picking it, prepping it for 4 hours. Yeah. Three people.
And you get to the end and it's just the small bowl left and you're like,
but it's,
that work.
It's super labor intensive.
Super
what we do, you know, yeah. But I think like the thing for us is always that like, so many people out there have bad experiences with fish.
Yeah.
So when we want people to come into us, like there can't be any bones. You know,
well, Martin had this great line, you know, like, no skin, no bone, no fear. He probably, you know,
did
the show with Paul Flynn. And I thought, you know what, Martin, you couldn't pick a better tagline for your show. No skin, no bone, no fear. And it really resonated with, because it really is, they're terrified of finding a bone.
Terrified. Yeah. And it ruins people like who I meet every day. I'd love to eat fish, but I can't because I had it once with a bone and it just freaks me out. And like with oysters, our oysters get checked twice before they go to the customer. So we'll clean them with a paintbrush to make sure there's no shell.
Mm.
Because again, if you have your first oysters and there's a load of shell in it, like I experienced with mine, it puts you off trying it for a few years.
Yeah.
So next up, we're going to jump across to our resident Ed Chef.
Oh, resident. I'm
because
upgraded.
Exactly. He has culinary conundrums. What have we got?
Thanks to everyone for sending in their conundrums. Please do so continually at food@goloudnow.com. Here we go. We're going down to Limerick first. Oh, apologies to Limerick. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Absolutely adore the pod. And as a result, I am trying to expand my culinary horizons. Since childhood, I have simply been absolutely rubbish at eating vegetables. Fair enough. I have recently, though, gotten into parsnips. What recipes, suggestions do you have, or cuisines it's good to have in? If you have any suggestions for use in Japanese or French cuisine, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you, Jamie in Limerick. Parsnips.
Well, I know Gaz has spoke about cooking parsnips and parsnip juice loads of times on here. But Gaz, I know you have a lovely recipe with the honey roast them, don't you, I think?
Yeah, well, look, honey roast is really nice. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a different one, you know. So if you just get a large parsnip and top it, tail it, and then peel it, okay? And using then the same peeler, once you get it peeled, shave it into long strands, like until you don't peel or shave the very, very center core, but keep peeling it until all these long slivers of parsnips come off, okay? And set them aside in a bowl. And then you're going to sprinkle, I'll tell you what's really good to sprinkle on it actually is a palm sugar. You can get palm sugar in any good health store around in the country. And look, if you don't have palm sugar, just use a regular caster sugar, but the palm sugar is better. Sprinkle it over your shaved ribbons of parsnip. Leave it for about 25 to 30 minutes, okay? Lift them off, pat dry them, in kitchen paper, and then have a deep fat fryer or a pan with a little bit of depth of oil. Bring it up to about 170 degrees. Drop in the parsnips and let them fry, and they're going to fry beautiful and crisp. Lift them up, gently shake off the excess oil, and then drop them into a bowl with a little bit of kitchen paper, really gently, to let all the excess oil, just like you would with a portion of chips, okay? Let the excess oil roll off them. Sprinkle them with a little bit of sea salt, and then set them aside. While that's set aside, what I do, look, I have a dish like where I do this blackened monkfish with the coconut bell pepper curry. And I'll give you a really quick recipe if you want something like a little bit Asian or whatever, but just get a pot with a heavy base pot, turn it on, get it hot, tiny little bit of vegetable oil in with a little bit of onion, and then half a red pepper, a quarter of green pepper, a quarter of a yellow pepper, and a tiny, tiny, maybe like half a stalk of celery diced up. Start to sweat that off without color, a little bit of salt, white pepper. When that softens itself down, Add in maybe 1 or 2 teaspoons of red Thai curry paste, okay? Whisk it in, or spoon it in, and then one 400 gram tin of full fat coconut milk, okay, and bring it to the boil, and then turn it down to a simmer and let it sit and simmer for about 15 minutes. Blitz it with a little hand blender, okay, and then adjust the seasoning. Add in about a half a handful or a small little handful of fresh coriander. Give it one more blitz, and you should have a lovely sort of creamy, consistent coconut bell pepper curry sauce. And you can cook a little bit of like spiced salmon, spiced sea bass. I do this dish with monkfish, where I just roll it in a little bit of blackened seasoning, pan fry it in vegetable oil. Then I add a couple of knobs of butter, lemon juice, base until it's cooked. Put it on a board, let it sit for about 3 minutes, and then slice it really thin. Get your plate, small ladle of your coconut bell pepper curry. Put your blackened monkfish slices on top of that. And then take a nice big handful of the parsnip crisps, sit them on top of the monkfish. And that is one of the nicest little fish dishes that you could ever eat. It might sound a wee bit, it might take you a while to go over and back that to hear it again, but it's a beautiful little dish and a lovely way of using parsnips as a garnish. And the flavor is very intense when they're fried and cooked that way too.
Jeez, well, I didn't know where you were going with that, but
that was incredible. Belter, eh? Wow. Jesus.
Well, come here,
lads,
you know,
lads, I'm some chef. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade here.
Did you ever think of taking it up, Gary? Honestly.
I'm the real deal.
What did he say again about self-praise? Anyway,
oh, there we go. Thank you, Jamie.
Just a little note for Jamie. If vegetables is a thing that you're struggling to get around and you like parsnips, you're so close to getting into everything else, because parsnips have a bit of big flavour. But I would say try a celeriac, because if you like parsnips, you're definitely going to like celeriac. It's a very similar type of vegetable. So I would say the next time you're out, grab one of them, and then you're well on the road to vegetables there by the sounds of you.
And don't forget, Jamie, there's always turnips. Yeah, just sit down there. Yeah, you're. Yeah. Sorry, one second. Now we've got a professor in the house.
How's it going?
Right, we're going to rattle on to the next question, Sandyford. Oh, I love this question. I fully realise I'm addressing two of the best chefs in the country, and you are used to answering conundrums about haute cuisine. But I've always wanted to ask a top chef, what's your favourite greasy takeaway? Assuming you lower yourselves, of course. Deirdre Brown in Sandyford. Oh, I like this one.
Well, Deirdre Brown in Sandyford wants to expose our dirty little secrets here with our takeaways. And I think I've mentioned them before, but there's a Thai takeaway in Swords called Sanook. And the reason why I like it so much is it reminds me of a takeaway that I used to get when I lived in Sydney. And it's probably as close, I would say, from a takeaway point of view, as food that I ate when I was in Thailand. I mean, he has Thai chefs working down there, the guy that owns it, and it's very, very authentic Thai cuisine. So, look, I like a Chinese, like the next person, but really, if I'm going to be going out and getting myself a Thai meal and I don't want to cook it for
myself. And if you get a Chinese, what are you ordering?
I like chicken chow mein, or I like a chicken curry, or I like the black bean type of stuff. I like, you know, nothing really that I kind of hang me
on. Are you picking
on
through it? Are you looking at the ingredients, like as a chef? I've always wanted to know this. Like, are you going, those vegetables are, they aren't blanched quite to my, or whatever, you know what I mean? This egg fried
well,
rice.
Well, one thing I can tell you is whenever you get vegetables in a Chinese restaurant, and Gareth, I'd be shocked if he doesn't think the same as me. If ever there was a group of dudes and girls that know how to cook vegetables, it's the Chinese, because it doesn't matter what Chinese in any part of the world I've ever had a dish. I love a ginger spring onion chicken myself. But if you ever get anything that's packed with vegetables, the color is always right. They're always al dente. It's almost always just bang on perfect as far as consistency goes, you know.
And not a turnip in the house or a parsnip to be seen.
Yeah, but listen, speaking of takeaways, right, I'd be shot if I didn't. I know, do you remember about a month or two ago, I mentioned the single sausage chicken curry tap in Steve's Cafe. Yeah.
Got some traction on your Instagram, I've seen.
Jesus Christ, man. It was all over the news in Donegal. Yeah, and it was in newspapers and all sorts.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. But Steve's Cafe on the hill in Remountain is just, since I was a kid, I mean, I don't eat takeaways really, But the odd time when I'm on a trip home, I'll always go into Steve's just out of, whether it's nostalgia purposes or what, I don't know. But hands down, best takeaway in the country.
Lads, thank you all so much for sending in your conundrums. Don't forget, food at goaloudnow.com.
So that's it for today's Dishing It Out Bite Size. Just a little taster to get your mouth watering of what's coming up with the new series that's coming out on Go Loud very shortly, or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, give us a like, share with your friends, get the word out there because the boys are back. Thanks for listening, and remember to subscribe and like on Go Loud or wherever you get your pods. Stay tuned, lots more to come.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.